Great to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about problems with trees today on the show. We'll also take other gardening questions as well, I'm sure. Diana Allfuth is back with us. She is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. And we're taking a look at why trees seem to be having more problems this year and what you can do about it. And as always, we'll take your gardening questions. Concerned about your trees or other plants? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Diana Allfuth, welcome.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning. It's always great to have you with us. And Jill was telling me that you have been getting a lot of calls about trees this year. What's going on?
Well, you know, it's been a busy year, and a lot of what's going on is all the rain that we've had. In most parts of the state, we've had regular and large amounts of rain, which means a lot of wet and a lot of moisture, which means a lot of fungi. And that translates to leaf spots and leaf blotches and trees that are stressed for one reason or another. And we're getting late in the season, so the trees have had a tough year. Some of them are starting to say enough and let's you know, get rid of this summer. And so a lot of symptoms are showing up, and people are calling in to see what's going on.
For fungi problems or fungal problems, how do you know if your trees have a fungus, and is it a problem?
Well, you know, it's great when people have problems and they call us to see, because there are some things that are harmless and there are some other things that are not so harmless. But we have a lot of foliar fungal diseases that cause spots or blotches and brown areas on the leaves, and they're totally cosmetic. They don't hurt anything. A tree gets its food through photosynthesis. It makes carbohydrates during photosynthesis. And as long as there's green tissue on the leaves, those leaves are making food for the tree. So if the if a leaf gets enough of a brown spot on it, the tree might say, you know, that leaf's not pulling its weight anymore. It's not worth keeping around, and it'll drop the leaf. And that's harmless because trees have lots and lots of leaves. And as long as there's still green tissue up in the tree doing photosynthesis, everything is fine. What we worry about is when the leaves like turn totally brown, or they turn brown at the top of the tree and they wilt and branches start dying back, because then that indicates that there's some kind of a break between the roots and the top of the tree. And that break can be caused by different things. It can be caused by something like Dutch elm disease or oak wilt disease or verticillium wilt that plugs the vascular system. And those are the ones that we worry about. But if you go out to any tree by this time of year, you are probably going to find lumps or bumps, which are galls caused by insects, or spots or blotches. And those, for the most part, are harmless to the tree. Now, if your tree is really bad and it's kind of defoliating, and by this time of year, again, some of these trees are saying enough for this summer and they're starting to head into dormancy early, they'll start dropping their leaves. And if that happens, the tree will still leaf out next year, but if that happens year after year, it is a stress on the tree, and then other problems can come in and be an issue for the tree. But if it's a one-shot thing, and a lot of cases that is what's happening is because we had so much rain this year and we've got fungi out there, it's kind of a one-time thing. The tree will leaf out fine next year, and if we have a warmer, drier year, we won't have so many spots.
Yeah.
But those leaves that do fall, in most cases, we have to remember that those spots on those leaves is where the fungus is growing. So it's going to send out spores, or it's going to overwinter on those leaves. So the best thing to do would be to clean up as many of those fallen leaves as possible so that you don't have as much inoculum around for next year. Because if we do get a wet year, especially a wet spring next year again, and you have a lot of those spores floating around, you'll have the problem again.
JR in Whitewater has, I think, a related question. JR, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
What's on your mind?
So we got a maple tree on the edge of the property. We just moved in April, and just in the last couple of weeks, I noticed the leaves are rather dark, and there's some spots. But we have another maple tree nearby that initially in the spring had a little bit of a curl to the edge, but it turned out normal. I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do, just wait it out.
Are the leaves, what are the spots look like?
It's like dark, almost black leaves, and then I'm not home right now, but just little raised bumps.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably nothing to worry about. Is there some parts of the leaf that is still green, but then some spots are black?
Yeah. It's like 80% maybe dark, and then the green, and they're still hanging on the tree, so it's
Yeah. And one of the things that we look at with fungal diseases is a lot of times it's worse at the bottom of the tree than the top of the tree because there's more humidity near the bottom of the tree, near the ground and stuff. And so one of the very, very common fungal diseases trees get is anthracnose. And it's a fungus that is everywhere. It has a wide host range, so it affects a lot of different plants from trees and shrubs to herbaceous perennials and beyond. And it really infects the tree leaves mostly in the spring when they're first kind of coming out of the bud and they're tender and young and easily colonized by the fungus. And then eventually parts of the leaf turn brown or blackish. And they'll hang on the tree as long as there's some green tissue. They'll hang on there all summer, but sometimes we don't see it until later in the season. The thing is that when we see spots, by the time we see the symptoms for these fungal diseases, it's too late to do anything about it. So obviously, if you have a large maple tree, it'd be hard to spray it anyway. But fungicides, for the most part, are protectants, and they have to be on before the spores invade the leaf tissue. So by the time we see the spots, it's way too late. And usually the weather conditions have changed anyway so that infection conditions wouldn't be correct for more infection anyhow. So it is in, like I say, most cases, it's not going to hurt the tree. It sounds like what you have is just some fungal things that the tree is otherwise healthy. And I wouldn't worry about it at all.
Yeah.
Like I said, ideally we would try to clean up those leaves this fall and not let things overwinter, but you know, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
And a lot of these fungal spores are going to be blowing in the wind no matter what, and all we have to do is keep our fingers crossed that conditions are not conducive to bad infection next year. But by the time we see symptoms, it's too late. There's not a lot you can do anyway for something like this. I really, you know, from what it sounds like, I wouldn't be worried about your trees at all.
Yeah. Thank you, JR. Appreciate the call. Judy in Madison has something for us. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry. My first comment has nothing to do with gardening. It's just kind of exciting for me. I'm sitting in the backyard, and while I was waiting to get to talk to you, an oriole came to the feeder.
Cool.
Just a note for people that feed orioles, you might want to put the grape jelly back out again for a while. But my question was, I'm going to be moving about 10 miles away from Madison to Wanakee. We already own the property, and I'm wondering about transplanting, if it's too late to transplant some of my perennials, and if not, some suggestions about the procedure of transplanting them.
Sure.
Okay. When are you moving?
When?
Yeah.
Well, I can, because we own the property over there.
Oh, you
already
can do it anytime.
You can do it anytime. Well, you're just coming into the best time to move most things. So we don't normally want to move perennials in the heat of summer because you're always going to leave some root system behind. And when it's 85 and sunny, the plants are losing a lot of moisture and it's hard for them to replenish it. So the best time to move perennials is either early spring when they're first starting growth or in fall. And our general rule is if it blooms in early spring, then transplant it in the fall. And if it blooms in the fall, transplant it in the spring, because we usually don't want to move things while they're in bloom, because they're putting a lot of resources towards blooming. And so we don't want to add the stress of moving them. But generally speaking, starting about now is the best time to move fall perennials, because or move perennials in the fall, because we want to get them moved so that they can get their root system a little bit established before the winter sets in. And even though our, you know, it's August, we're supposed to be like at 80 degrees, but it's 56 up here in Eau Claire today. So it's not following the books. But usually end of August and through September is the best time. Even though the night temperatures and the air temperature is getting cooler, the soil is still warm, so those roots will be active and they'll put on some growth, and then they'll be ready to take off in the springtime. So if you have something like asters or maybe even sedum that is going into bloom now, if you can wait until spring for those, that's probably best. But if you don't have that option, go ahead and move them. And all right. Just water everything in well. Don't fertilize. You wait until next year to do any fertilizing if you think that's necessary. But we don't want any top growth this fall. We just want those roots to be active down in the soil.
And do I water them before I dig them up to take them?
It's always a good idea to have them well hydrated before they move, because, like I said, no matter how big of a hole you dig, you're going to be moving, you're going to be leaving a lot of roots behind. So make sure they're well hydrated. Dig them up. If you can put them in some kind of pots or bins or something like that, you want to keep that root ball from drying up. You don't want it exposed. You can just even, you know, throw them in the back of a pickup truck and put leaves or straw or grass clippings and wet that all down. Maybe cover that with a tarp if that helps, and just keep them from the roots from drying out and get them planted as quickly as you can. And if you want to, you can just get, you know, old nursery pots and stuff and basically just put them in the pots, and then you can take them to the new place, and as long as you keep them watered, you can hold them for a little while before, you know, until you can get time to get them planted.
There we go.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. Appreciate
good luck.
The call. Yeah, good luck. Annabelle in Fort Atkinson, it's your turn. Hi, Annabelle.
Good morning. I don't have a problem with the tree. A few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, at the farmer's market, I bought two, I want to say, seedlings of hazelnut.
Okay.
And I really don't want them to be trees. I would prefer them to be bushes, because if I planted them not too far away from the foundation of my house. The first year or so, I wondered if they even were growing. But now, and so I pinched the top, oh, a couple years ago. So I have a branch, and maybe the larger of the two is probably maybe 5 feet high. My question is, I have not had any experience with this before, so do they make blossoms that would eventually turn into a nut?
Hmm. Yes, they do. And the blossoms aren't real showy, so they're not going to look all bright and everything. The blossoms are relatively small, but yes, they do then get the nuts on them. And depending on your hazelnut that you have, there's a lot of variability in how big they want to get. So some of them, you know, they're like large bush, small tree size, and
okay.
That's kind of a relative term and stuff. But they can be anywhere from 15 feet tall to maybe even 20 or 25 feet tall. There's a lot of genetic variability depending on what it is you actually got and the growing conditions. So on sandier, drier soils, they may not grow as big as they will on a moister, richer soil. But they do get kind of inconspicuous blooms. I mean, you'll be able to see when they're in bloom, but they're not bright and showy, you know, like a hydrangea or a magnolia or something like that. And then they'll get the nuts. And how big the nuts are, again, is there's a lot of genetic variability on that.
Yeah.
And there's
could
actually
be marble size and
yeah,
bigger.
there's a lot of interest in trying to develop a hazelnut industry around here, because in Europe, hazelnuts and hazelnut oil is very popular and very lucrative for farmers. And our problem here is hardiness of the ones that get the larger nuts. But they're breeding and selecting and trying to get some consistency. But again, because there's so much genetic variability, there's a ways to go on that. But you should eventually get nuts. Pardon?
Do they have to be left as tall as 8 feet? That would be, I guess, taller than I would like.
You can prune them down, and the time to prune them would probably be either late. The best time to prune most everything is going to be like in March and stuff. So you can prune them to keep them shorter, but you just have to be careful that, you don't want to like shear them down every year, because you may be pruning off the wood that would be causing or producing the flowers and then the nuts.
Well, mine aren't really that big, so I won't be doing any trimming.
Okay. Yeah. And if you want to keep them, you want to top them out at 8 feet, then don't wait until they're 10 feet to prune them back. Just prune a little bit each year to kind of keep them small once they start getting close to your 8 foot limit.
There you go, Annabelle. Thank you so much for calling. Diana Alfuth is our guest today, UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Let's go back to the phones and to Kathleen in Delavan with a question. Hi, Kathleen.
Hey. Good morning. Actually, two quick questions. I think you may have just addressed the one about the maple tree.
Yeah.
I have a very large silver maple, and when the leaves come out, everything's fine. It's going great. And then all of a sudden, you've got all this fall of little shriveled leaves, and it looks like, it's not doing well. And then all of a sudden, it does fine, and now it's looking good, and this happens every year. So is that anthracnose?
That's most likely some anthracnose going on in there. There's a few other things that can cause that too, but bottom line is the tree's doing well now, so that's
okay.
What counts.
Yeah,
it's not in a place I can take it out. And then my other question was, I had about a 4 foot white pine. And then for some reason, it didn't do well, and it looked like it was dying. And then, like the next year, it started growing. And then all of a sudden, there was a second leader right next to it. They're like Siamese twins. They're really close together. One arborist told me I should remove one, but it is such a beautiful tree now. It's about 15 feet tall. It's very full. Is there any reason I have to take one out?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because if you take one out, you're going to have a lopsided tree.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going
to
lose that shape. But the reason we don't want two leaders or two branches like that is as they get bigger, every year, of course, they each get fatter, right, when they put on their growth. And eventually they're going to push on each other, and then eventually they're going to split and one of them's going to go down. And when that happens is hard to predict. You know, it might be 5 years from now. It might be 30 years from now.
Oh.
So it's a tough thing to predict, but that's what you're heading toward. And that's why the arborist would tell you to remove one of them. But if it's already 15 feet tall, like I said, it's not going to look great.
No.
And eventually that flat side will fill in some. But again, it's hard to predict how much it will fill in and how long that will take. You might just flip a coin to decide what to do on that one.
It's, okay.
It's kind of a... there's pros and cons, but that's what you're heading towards, is them, those two trunks or two leaders pushing on each other and then splitting.
At this point, if it was me, I'd just keep them.
I probably would too. Keep an eye on it, knowing that that's where you're heading. And when it starts looking like those branches are, or those stems are pushing on each other, plant another tree in the area in preparation for this one going. But
okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. If you want to pose a photo, maybe you've got a tree or another plant with an issue, you can put it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show. Love to see that. Although, Diana, do you have our Facebook page up?
I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay, good. Oh, man. And that's the Larry Mealer Show. That's the title of the page. And email us as well at ideas@wpr.org. Dwayne in Weston up next. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Larry. Couple questions. I have three flowering crabs in addition to, you know, maples and oaks on my lawn. And the crabs, they're messy trees. They're beautiful for that 1 week, but you know, if you get these lawn services, they come around and say, well, spray them. What are they putting on there? And I know I had to spray my birch this year for Japanese beetles, which we had in Dubuque, Iowa, a few years ago on our birch down there. And I had this vegetable and garden insect spray, and it says kill Japanese beetles, cutworms, tomato. But it's got cyflutherin, C-Y-F-L-U-T-H-R-I-N, is the acronym. Can you put that on your...
trees?
Tree, yeah.
Cyflutherin.
So crab apples, the biggest thing that they get, it goes back to fungus, and it's having a banner year. So it's usually apple scab fungus that affects the crab apples. You can also get cedar apple rust if you have cedar trees in the air and you get that going. But they're both cosmetic for the most part on those tree leaves, and that's why your tree leaves back out every year. And some varieties of crab apples have more resistance to these diseases, but remember that resistance is resistance, it's not immunity. And so when we have a year like this, when we have so much perfect conditions with the moisture and stuff, your resistance gets kind of blown out the window and the apple scab, you know, comes in. So what they're spraying when they spray with that is a fungicide. And that's, I think, what it's one of those things that Captan is one of the common fungicides that's used. And basically, if you're looking for something to treat your trees for that, you just, you know, go to your garden center and you read labels. Captan is the most common fungicide for apples and crab apples. But again, it has to be put on before the symptoms appear. So you have to start spraying that stuff just as the buds are breaking in the springtime. And if you miss that window and you're too late with it, you're not going to get the effect and you're still going to have crummy leaves.
Japanese beetles?
Japanese beetles, that's an insecticide. So that's different than a fungicide. So that's not going to do anything for the crummy-looking leaves on your crab apple. And that's a broad-spectrum insecticide that kills Japanese beetles as well as pretty much every other insect. And Japanese beetles had a banner year this year across the state as well. Lots and lots of calls and lots of defoliation on that. Fortunately, it's the same kind of thing where those Japanese beetles are eating all those leaves off the tree, but that's not going to kill the tree. The tree will come back and leaf out next year, and hopefully the Japanese beetles won't have a happy winter and they won't be out in as large numbers next year. It's the kind of thing that it doesn't hurt the tree straight out, but if the tree is defoliated for several years in a row, it's really going to stress that tree, and then other problems can move in. Like in the case of birch, we worry about bronze birch borer getting into the trunk. And that happens on stressed trees. So there are lots of different insecticides that will kill the Japanese beetles, and there's lots of and the fungicides for the crab apples. Like I say, Captan is usually the most common thing. The thing is that any of these things that you use, make sure you know what you're using them for. Make sure you read the labels. Make sure that it's labeled for that problem and for that tree. Always follow the label instructions. Remember, more is not better. Don't mix it at a heavier concentration because you think that'll help, because sometimes that can hurt. And again, you know, kind of goes back to knowing a little bit of what the problem is to know if the whatever you want to spray is going to be effective. So like spraying Captan now on your crab apple would be a total waste because the damage is long done. And, you know, we don't want to put, we don't want to use these things unless we have to. We want to use them in the most effective manner. So.
Well, I did have one other thing. You said you do landscaping, but I just want to put a plug in for, we did autumn nine barks with red prints, or dahlias, and we get so many compliments on those, like a combination of two like bushes in front of, like under our patio window and that. And I don't know if you've probably heard of those, red prints, Bulgarian, and autumn nine barks. They're not blooming again. They're twice now they bloomed, you know, so anyway.
Oh. Yeah, it's a nice combination, and some of those combinations, when you see them, they can be just breathtaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Duane. Appreciate your call. You know, kind of relating to the flowering crab question, Kelly on Facebook says she had three cherry trees cut down because they had brown rot. She was told not to, she couldn't plant any fruit trees with a pit because they would also die, so she ended up replacing the cherry trees with flowering crab apples. Will that work?
Yeah, brown rot is a stoned fruit disease for the most part, and it doesn't affect the apples or crab apples. So, so there shouldn't be any problem. And brown rot, again, is something the spores blow in the wind. It's not like it's in the soil, but when it's on the leaves or the fruit and it falls, it overwinters on that, and then it's blown around the next year. So it's kind of one of those things, once you have it in the area, you kind of have it there. So crab apples are a good choice. And quite honestly, cherries get several other diseases too, so
yeah,
we don't usually consider them long-lived landscape trees.
Elaine in Madison, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a problem with a birch tree, and the poor thing started over a month ago. The leaves are falling, and they are just looking like tiny little lace doilies. They're just peppered with holes. And they're little yellow things, and the tree is now just about half denuded.
Okay, and where do you live?
Madison.
My guess is you had Japanese beetles up in that tree eating this summer.
Oh, my goodness.
And because, like I said, Japanese beetles had a wonderful year, and they love birch trees. They love elms, and they love lindens, and they love birch trees. And that's what they do, is they eat the tissue between the veins.
Uh-huh.
So the leaves end up looking like lace.
Yeah.
And so they were probably up there munching away, and now, you know, some of those leaves are falling because there's no leaf tissue on them anymore to do photosynthesis, and your tree's starting to look towards a long winter's nap here. You know, it's too late to do anything about it, and your tree should leaf out just fine in the spring. And, you know, that's just my guess at what you had going on.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Jill in Cedarburg next. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have what I believe is a mountain ash or rowan tree.
Okay.
In my front yard. I apologize. I don't know because I didn't plant it because I just moved in a year ago. But I do notice that all over the trunk of the tree, the bark is covered in a lichen, yellow, light green. The bark is not smooth. It's very splitted and, you know, it's split and just coarse looking.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to kill my tree?
No.
Should I do anything about it?
No. The worst thing you can do is try to go scrape those lichens off because that might kill your tree. So lichens are an organism that's a symbiotic relationship between a fungus and an algae. And which fungus and which algae is involved determines the color. And lichens grow all over the world, and they can be bright fluorescent orange, or a lot of what we get around Wisconsin are kind of the dusty gray-green ones. But we get some of the oranger ones and yellowy ones and white ones as well. And all those lichens are looking for is a hard surface to grow on. So your tree trunk, your tree bark is a nice hard surface. They're not taking anything out of that tree. They're just using it as a surface. They grow on fence posts and old gravestones and rocks and house siding and shingles, rooftops and all that kind of thing. So they're not taking anything out of that tree. They take everything that they need. The algae part of it does photosynthesis, and the fungus part of it provides some moisture from the air and stuff. And so they're just hanging out there. So that's not going to kill your tree. If you have a problem with the tree, if the tree's dying back or has any other problem, it's caused by something else.
There we go.
Good to know. Thanks so much. Because the tree, it's just, if anybody can get one of those trees, they're just beautiful, spring and summer. I highly recommend, and fall too. Just a beautiful tree.
Thank you, Jill. Appreciate the call. Well, Lee in Green Bay has something. Let's go there. Hi, Lee.
Yeah, good morning. I have two questions for your guest. I've got a little stand of tamarack, roughly 30 to 40 feet from a black walnut that's been maybe 20 feet tall. Have you had any instances where the tamarack eventually are going to be affected by that black walnut, but they're juggling?
How far away are they?
30, 40 feet. You know, there's just one black walnut.
How big is the black walnut?
20 feet tall, 2.5-inch diameter trunk. You know, if there's any going to be any problems in the future, because I've got about 10 of the tamarack.
Okay.
They're 68 feet tall, the tamarack.
Okay. So offhand, I'm not exactly sure if tamarack is susceptible to the juglone, which is the compound that walnuts give off.
Yeah.
And here's one of the problems. There's a lot of unknowns about which trees are affected by it, because it's a tough one to do research on, because the research has to be really long term. So we do have, and I'm trying to look it up here quick, UW Extension does have a list of trees that are either tolerant or susceptible to black walnut toxicity. And so we have to look at that list to see if tamarack's listed there. But having said that, it may or may not be totally accurate, because a lot of it is based on anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
If your black walnut is 20 feet tall, that means the root system is probably out maybe 40 feet already. So you might already have roots in that zone where your tamarack is, and if you're not seeing any symptoms yet, that's a good sign. But a little Google search here, and like I said, I'm trying to look up and see if tamarack's listed on the list of resistant or tolerant plants. But okay, trees. Da, 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 da. It isn't listed at all. So I don't have an answer for you.
And then what about accolade elms? Have they been pretty good about resisting Dutch elm disease? I lost three of my American elms in the last 2 years.
Yeah, so they do have resistance, but Brian Huddleston in our disease diagnostics clinic has said that even all the resistant ones, pretty much they will come in with it. So it goes back to they do have resistance, but it's resistance, not immunity.
Okay.
So, especially, you know, if the trees get stressed by some other reason, that might make it a little more unable to overcome that resistance. But the resistant ones, they're good. They're resistant, but they're not immune.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kel in Sugar Camp, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
I have two questions, very different. One is, how do you start birch trees from seed? I have a huge clump that's each triple, and it's each trunk is over a foot in diameter, and they have the lovely catkins in the spring, and I don't know if they're self-fertile. Are those the tiny seeds in those catkins when they fall, when they dry and fall? How do I plant seeds for birch trees?
Well, the yes, you're, the when after those catkins and stuff in summer, all that stuff that falls on your driveway and clumps and stuff, those are seeds.
Okay.
So so you need to just, you know, scoop them up, collect them, and the typically most of our native trees and stuff, they need, those seeds need a cold period,
right,
and they get that over winter before they sprout. So we'd have to look up birch to see what kind of cold period they actually need. But the simplest way to do it is to put those seeds in like a tin can, a tin, you know, with a lid on it and stuff, so they're squirrel-proof and mouse-proof, and leave it in a shady spot over winter and just let winter give them their cold treatment. Otherwise, you can, you know, use refrigerator, that sort of a thing. And then you would plant them in the spring like any other seed or any other tree with, you know, just in potting soil. I'd put them in pots and stuff until they're sprouted. Yeah. They are pretty weedy in my yard.
Yeah.
So I think they grow pretty quickly. And, you know, I'd have to look up for sure. But birch trees, you know, those seeds come down pretty early in the summer. So they might not even need cold treatment. They might sprout in summer already. So a lot of times the seeds that fall early in the year sprout that same year that they fall. So
it's really funny. I never see baby birch trees trying to come out of the ground around under this huge canopy. And that's why I thought I'd ask if there's anything special I needed to do.
Yeah. Well, part of it is if it's under this huge canopy, it might be really dark shade in there. So birch trees are kind of early in the succession. So if you were to clear cut woods, the first things to come back up are birch. And they kind of grow up and everything. And they're in full sun at that point.
What'd you say? Yeah.
So it might be that they're not sprouting under that dark canopy just because it's too dark for them. And if you were to get them more out on the edge where there's a little more sun, they might be more willing to sprout and grow up.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering because they're so expensive when they're like at 8 feet, you buy them at nursery. They're so expensive. I thought there might be some sort of trick to it that you had to do that made it harder to grow them. The white birch. And the other question I had, you were talking about the leaders. I've got some spruces in my mom's yard that were planted there before she moved in, and I babied them, and they've gotten fairly tall, 4 to 8 feet, and they're in a triangle. And two of them have split leaders at about 2 feet up from the ground. And what I was thinking is I would cut the leaves, just the top part of one of the leaders, and let the other one keep going so that I would keep the fullness of the tree all the way around.
Yeah, that's not going to buy you anything because what's going to happen on that one, if you don't cut it all the way to the bottom, where you cut it on the top, it's going to keep growing and it's going to take one of those side branches and start going straight up and reform that leader.
It's going to still want to keep going straight up.
Yep, and that trunk is going to still get fatter every year and you'll still get that same thing where they push on each other eventually.
Okay, so, because the side that I have to take off facing the sun, I was worried about sun scald over the winter if I took it off now.
Yeah, you know, and spruce usually have a little bit more of a flaky bark, so it's not as much of an issue as it is like with young maple trees or young apple trees,
mm-hmm.
that kind of a thing. But but you're right, you know, I mean, you're going to expose something to more sun than it's used to being exposed to.
Yeah, so, there you go.
I was just worried I would lose them, you know, because of the sun over the winter. Definitely.
Yeah.
And I just did look up real quick, and the birch seeds, they do need about 2 months of cold stratifying before they'll sprout. So
put them in a can, cover it up, leave them out over winter, and there you go.
Or in your refrigerator. You
or
just
in
don't
your
want
fridge.
Them. Yep, you don't want them to dry out. You don't want them too hot. You don't want them too cold, and you don't want mice in them.
There you go. Thank you, Cal, for calling. Appreciate it. Diana Alfeth, our guest today. She is UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County, teaches landscape design at UW River Falls as well. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Diana Alfeth, Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call if you can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post photos and questions on our Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show. Love to hear from you. Joe in Rhinelander has a question, so let's go to Joe. Hi, thank you for calling. Joe, are you there? Oh, we must have lost Joe.
Uh-oh.
Well, let's try Rich in Clayton then. Rich, hello.
Yeah, I'm in the town of Clayton, which is up by Neenah, Wisconsin. Anyways, I got a problem that I'm kind of just sick about. We planted a quart of dogwood in a one-gallon pot about 3 years ago, and it was growing just great. It now is about 2 inches at the base, two-inch diameter, and about 6 feet tall and about 6 feet wide. And then I took off the bark protector so I could clean all the weeds around and get the weeds away. And then before I could put that back up, I was mowing the lawn and I nicked the trunk at the base with the riding lawnmower and took out about one-third of the bark.
Oh.
About the size of a silver dollar. And my wife and I are at a disagreement. I think just let it grow and see how it does. And she says we should dig it out and replace it.
Well, that's an unfortunate thing.
Yeah.
So it goes back to that connection from the roots to the top of the tree. And in a simplistic visual, if you think about underneath the bark, there being like a circle of straws that go up and down from the roots to the top of the tree, that's where water gets to the top of the tree and the stuff from photosynthesis gets down to the roots. And so when you whack that bark and do any damage to the trunk, it breaks some of those straws. And unlike us, like if we cut our hand and we cut through a vein, that vein eventually, you know, reconnects and blood pumps through. That doesn't happen with the vascular system of a tree. It's broken forever. How your pagoda dogwood will do will depend on just how different factors. How much of those straws or that connection was damaged, the otherwise overall health of the tree, the growing conditions, the moisture levels, and all that sort of thing. So it's kind of that flip of the coin thing again, where a third of the way around, you know, that's kind of, usually I say, you know, if it's half the way around, it's probably not going to do well in the future. A third of the way around, it may be just fine, but it kind of all depends on these other factors. And if it were me, I'd probably leave it and see what happens, unless this is such a super, super important part of your landscape that you just cannot give it a couple of years to see how it does. Pagoda dogwoods typically should be growing in a little bit of shade and not in really hot, dry areas. So that helps them, because then they don't lose as much moisture from the leaves and as something growing in full sun. But there isn't anything you can do about it. You know, putting pruning paint on it or wrapping it or things like that does not help. So, you know, once there's damage to a trunk, you don't do any of that. And that's kind of the number one reason why we're starting to see some like maples changing color already. And 95% of the time when people ask me, why is my maple changing color already? I say, well, look at the trunk and see if there's an old wound on it somewhere. And usually it is. That's usually the cause of it. And that's just an indication that there's not as strong of a connection from the roots to the canopy. So it's kind of up to you if you want to replace it or not. But I think it has a chance to make it.
Diana, I have a couple of questions yet. One is I can remember one of the two questions. One is, if I had taken that scab that I had knocked off the bark and plopped it back on there like a Band-Aid and then taped it, would that...
No, that would not do. It's not like our skin that it'll kind of heal back on. It would just hold moisture in there, and it's not going to heal back on. So, no, that absolutely would not do anything.
Okay. And the other question is, if I let this tree grow, and it was healthy, is healthy, and we don't know what it's going to do next year and the year after. But if it grows up and it gets to be like a 4-inch or 5-inch diameter trunk, is that silver dollar size scab that I cut out going to keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger, or is it going to just stay that size?
Yeah, the damaged area won't get bigger, and the tree will try to heal from the sides. It'll try to callus over. And so if it does do that in 5 years or so, you might barely be able to see that wound because it'll kind of close in from the side some. But the wound is still always there, okay? It just kind of gets covered up with growth from the sides.
So the callus is not going to have the sugars go up and down the plant, and the phloem is not going to regenerate.
It does a little bit. It, like I say, it closes in from the side, and it improves that connection. So if it makes it through a few years and it's closing over like that, the canker that you caused by the damage is not necessarily going to get bigger unless you get something else that gets in that hole. I mean, sometimes you can get opportunistic fungi or something that'll, get in there and that sort of thing. But that's not, that's usually more of a problem on things like fruit trees and that. But I think this tree has a chance, and there's all you can do is give it time and keep your fingers crossed.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call, Rich. Actually, there was a related question. We'd probably take it. Trina on Facebook says one of her trees was hit by a car recently. About a third of the bark was removed, and a portion was also separated from the trunk. She duct taped the bark back that had fallen down. This is not a good idea, I don't think. And
no.
She says, is there anything she could do to keep the tree alive?
Yeah. By putting that bark back on, like I said, it's not going to heal back on there. It's going to hold moisture under there. It's going to give a place for insects and fungus to grow and stuff. So that is not helpful at all. And I would say, if anything, take that off and let, it is what it is. The damage is done. If a third of it is gone, plus some of it is popped off, it's basically gone. That tree's prognosis is not real good.
Not very good.
But again, it's so hard to say, well, should you just cut it down now and cut your losses, or should you give it time and see what happens? And it kind of depends on your situation. If it's a tree that you're okay with just giving it time and see what happens, go ahead. Eventually, if the damage is bad enough, what you'll see for symptoms are early fall color, like I mentioned, a dieback, where branches up at the top of the tree aren't leafing out or they're getting smaller than normal leaves. And that's an indication that that connection from the roots to that part of the tree is broken. And so your tree might over time die back some, get lopsided, be ugly, and you're going to want to cut it down. or eventually, because you have that wound in that trunk, as it gets bigger, it might become hazardous because that might allow for less strength in the trunk or decay fungi to move in. So you have to be aware of that as well. But if it's, if the damage isn't too bad and you're okay leaving it and giving it some time to see what happens, some of these trees can, depending on how bad the damage is, they can heal somewhat and live with it and compensate for it. And some of them are never going to be able to be a nice, big, beautiful tree.
Jackie emailed that the crabapple tree in her front yard is growing a standard size apple. She has regular apple trees in her backyard, but this is the first time she's ever seen this. Could this be cross-pollination?
Yeah, it's not cross-pollination, but what I would look for is if there's more than one trunk, because sometimes the rootstock will grow up and become tree size. A shoot will come up, and then it's mixed in with the crabapple tree, and the rootstock is sometimes a standard apple. And so then that's forming standard apples because there's branches mixed in with that, okay? So she has small-sized crab apples on there and some of the branches, and then this big one on there. it's probably coming from a different genetic base. And so I would look at if some of the suckers had grown up from the root system and grown up into the canopy and are mixed up in there. But cross-pollination isn't going to show up until the next generation. So if you took a crab apple and you pollinated it with an apple tree from the backyard, it's not going to affect the fruit this year, but what it would affect is if you took the seeds from that crab apple and planted them and grew up a tree, that tree is going to be showing the cross-pollination traits.
And that's going to be kind of weird.
Well, that's how we get new varieties and wonderful new apples and stuff, is when the plant breeders do just that kind of thing. So, but like I said, the apple itself forms from the female plant's tissue, and whatever pollinated it doesn't show up until the next generation.
Yeah, you don't really know who the father is.
That's right. That's right. Could be very sour crab apple.
Oh, well, we don't want that.
but that is how you get fun new things, is that cross-pollination. And so you know, she should taste that big apple and see what it's like.
Because, she likes it.
Right. And if it's good, then you can't take the seeds from it and plant those and get the same thing, because whatever pollinated that blossom was a combination of the female tree and whoever pollinated it. It could have been the crab apple.
So there you go. Diana Alfeth, our guest today, UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, coming from our Eau Claire studios, by the way, Diana Alfeth, back with us, UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County. She also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls. What questions do you have about maybe getting your garden ready for fall? Maybe you've got some tree questions. We've certainly had a lot of them so far. I hope you'll join us. 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And we'll go back to the phones, Diana, and to Jeannie in Antioch, Illinois. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a maypole that, since the beginning of July, started losing its leaves. I live on a lake. We were flooded. The water didn't come up to the tree, but maybe about 20 feet. And the ground, of course, was extremely saturated with water. Could that be the reason, or something else going on?
So you said it was losing its leaves. Are they falling green, or are they turning brown first? Or
they are turning brown, yes, they are. They're not the beautiful yellow gold that they were in the past, just brown.
Okay. And are they spotted, or are they fully brown?
They're fully brown. They're kind of folding on themselves. Very few of them are just flat.
Okay. And is it all the leaves throughout the whole tree, or is it bottom more than top more?
You know, I think it's all the leaves. Kind of hard to say. I'd have to go out and look.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, it's hard to say without, you know, seeing things and that. But the flooding could indeed be a cause of it. So maples, generally speaking, silver maples are more tolerant of some wet conditions, like especially like spring flooding and that kind of thing. But if it's a sugar maple or a red maple, they like well-drained soil. And so if their roots that are normally in well-drained soil are saturated for a while because of flooding, it can definitely send them into a shock. And what happens is the majority of a tree's roots are up in the top 8 to 15 inches of the soil. They don't necessarily grow downward. They grow outward so that they can get oxygen that permeates from the surface of the soil. And the roots have to be getting oxygen in order to be able to take up water or nutrients or anything else. So if the soil gets too saturated, the roots are suffocating and they can't take up water, even though obviously there's lots of water there when the water's level is high. And so that could have sent that tree into a shock where it wasn't able to take up water for a while. And it very well could be what started this. If it came to within 20 feet of that tree, roots typically go out, they can go out up to three times the height of the tree. So if you have a 50-foot tall tree, some of those important little roots that are doing all the important work could be 150 feet out. So if the...
So that's very close to the lake at that point.
Yeah. So it could be that flooding event that triggered all of this. Prognosis is hard to say because it may have it may have killed some things as far as if water didn't get up to the ends of the branches, then that's the farthest place from the root. So that's the first place that dies from drought symptoms and in whatever the cause is. You might have had some those end twigs die. You might have next year where the tree leafs out, but maybe not at the very tips of the branches. It might be, it's hard to say how far into the vascular system the damage would have gone.
Okay. So I did just look up, and that most of the leaves are gone from the top of the tree. There's still some green leaves on the bottom of it.
Okay. Mm. Well, that's worrisome then because, like I said, the typical symptoms of drought is going to be the top of the tree goes first because that's the farthest place to get water to. And like I said, flooding, you'll get drought symptoms because the roots aren't able to take up the water. So that's kind of telling us that, okay, there's some problem with the connection from the roots to the top of the tree, and this may very well be, the flooding may very well be the problem. Because it's late in the season, the tree's not going to try to grow any more leaves this year. I'd probably wait and see what happens in the spring, but be prepared that tree may have severe dieback, if not total dieback.
There we go. All right. Thank you for calling, Janine. I appreciate your call. Bonnie in Menominee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
I've got some property that I have actually two questions about. One, there seems to be a fungus in some old stand of peonies, and the roots are all, or the leaves are all black. Have I lost it, or will they come back?
That's very common for peonies by this time of year. The foliage is just kind of going downhill. They're spotty and brown and floppy and all that kind of thing.
Is black, though.
Yeah. Usually the root system is going to be just fine. And if those leaves are black, go ahead and remove them. If they're really yellowy, they're not doing photosynthesis anymore. So you can go ahead and remove that. But typically the peonies do come back next year. Sometimes we can get some kind of root rots and things in peonies, but it's not uncommon for the foliage of peonies to get fungal diseases and things by this time of year.
Okay. Second question, there are some volunteer trees on the property. They were cut off, but they grow back.
Uh-huh.
How far down do you have to cut to kill them?
Well, it depends on the tree. It depends on the species. But a lot of them will just keep shooting up. The key is to exhaust the energy in the root system. So as soon as they start sprouting back up and get any little leaves out there, they start doing photosynthesis and restoring food energy to those roots. So the quicker you can cut them off, the more you'll starve out that root system. Your other option is to use an herbicide, and you can usually use either a broadleaf weed killer like 2,4-D or Roundup glyphosate or product, active ingredient called triclopyr, and that's usually sold as a poison ivy killer or brush killer. But what you do with that, if you choose to use that, is to cut it off and then immediately just paint or spray the cut stem so that that herbicide just goes down into that stem and down into the root system and kills the root system once and for all. So you can either starve it out by removing leaves as soon as they form, or you can use the little bit of herbicide on there. And like I said, depends on what species it is for how tenacious it will be. But those are your best options.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Bonnie. Mandy in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi there. You were just talking about diseases in cherry trees a little while ago.
Yeah.
And I have two very sad cherry trees in our yard that I'm hoping you can help me with.
Okay.
We had, this has never happened on these cherry trees before, and this year, several months ago, they got some little black spots, and by, like, early July, we had no leaves left at all. Cherries turned black.
That's not good.
Yeah, well, and so are there any leaves on the trees now?
No.
Okay.
Like maybe one.
One leaf?
Yeah. One little straggler hanging on there.
Yeah. So it kind of goes back to how happy fungus is this year. We had a lot of fungal things. And when any time there's like spots on the leaves like that, it's usually fungus. There are some bacterial spots that we can get. And there are some spots that can be caused by insects. But my guess is that there were a lot of fungal spores. Did you do any kind of spraying on them or?
Nope.
Yeah. So whether or not the tree is alive, you can go out and you can just take your thumbnail and out at the ends of the twigs and stuff, you can just scrape the bark off a little bit and see if it's green underneath. If it's still green underneath that thin bark on the twigs, that means the tree is still alive. It's got buds there that are going to sprout out as leaves next year, and it's just shut down early. Okay, again, it's one of those that gave up for the season and is hoping for better conditions next year. If the twig is dry and it's not green underneath and you try snapping it and it snaps off, well, then that branch is dead. Cherries are susceptible to a lot of spots and fungal things, and so that would be your test to see if that tree's still alive.
All right.
Something we should treat it with next year?
Well, again, is this like a tart cherry or that you try to harvest off of, or is it an ornamental cherry? Yeah. So you do need to treat, you know, it's hard growing fruit in Wisconsin because we have high humidity and we have fungal diseases and things. So so what you need to do is to go to our Extension Learning Store and get the publication on cherry diseases and growing cherries in Wisconsin. And if you need help with that, just pop me an email, Pierce County UW Extension. You'll get my email and I'll send that out to you. It's just like with apples or any of our other fruit, these fungal things usually take hold and they get active right away in the spring when things start warming up and buds start breaking. So fungicides are preventatives. They don't cure things once they're there in most cases. They have to be applied before the fungus takes hold. So if our conditions, you said you didn't have problems in the past because maybe we didn't have the right temperature and moisture conditions in the past. So we don't know what next year will bring. You might be able to do nothing and not have a problem if we have drier and warmer conditions. But of course, we can't predict that very well. So as a precaution, you might need to do some treatments of fungicide ahead of time. The other thing to do, like we talked about earlier, is if any of those fruit that formed and fell to the ground or leaves, the more you can clean that up, the less pressure you're going to have next year for these diseases to be present.
Yeah.
So cleanup is important, but you do need to look at the treatment protocols for the particular fruit that you're trying to grow. And, you know, it's just tough to grow perfect fruit in Wisconsin with our climate.
There we go. And the Learning Store, if you go to learningstore.uwex.edu, or probably if you put UW Learning Store, it's going to pop up on a search engine. And that publication that Diana was talking about will be available there.
And, you know, one other hint for people who are looking for things, you know, you can get on the internet and there's a lot of information out there. Make sure that you always go to a site that has .edu at the end. That's going to be a university, so it's going to be research-based and you know, good information. But the other thing is we want what's happening in Wisconsin, right? So if you have a problem like cherry diseases, if you just Google cherry diseases UWEX, you're going to come to, you know, the top site's going to be our local Wisconsin University information, and that's going to get you to the most relevant information for everybody here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, very good points. Thanks again, Mandy, for calling.
Yeah, and if we were going to prune that tree, when's the best time to do that?
The best time's going to be in late winter, like early March, that sort of a thing, because the tree is fully dormant at that time. Diseases and insects aren't active, so that wounds, those pruning wounds, will have time to heal up before the diseases and insects get active. So best time is going to be in early to mid-March.
There we go.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mandy. And Willie in Gays Mills, you're up. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for talking about trees again, Larry. I love them just about as much as you do. Hey, I am working this morning out at the largest organic orchard in the Midwest, Turkey Ridge Orchards. And I don't have a question about disease or anything or bad trees. I'm saying we're having a banner year, and the varieties of apples that were planted here, you know, 25, 30 years ago, were selected for their disease resistance, whether
yep.
it was the scab or all the other maladies that happened to apple trees. And we're just having a wonderful year, and the trees are heavily laden. And some of the varieties, the early ones that we've been doing are Red Free, McShay, Williams Pride. I can't remember all the names right now, but it's just wonderful to work up here and know that there's no chemicals being used, and sustainable best management practices that are being in place, and it's good to see.
And that goes back to what we mentioned earlier. Resistance is important, and the plant breeders have really worked at selecting plants to be resistant to diseases, because it's the best way to solve a problem is to not have the problem in the first place, right? And different varieties of apples do have more or less resistance. And obviously, we also want flavor, and we want, you know, all the other features, you know, for baking or fresh storage or whatever that makes us choose a particular apple variety over another. But resistance goes a long, long way, and that's really important on crab apples, too. We grow them for their ornamental value. We don't want them defoliated by the end of the year. So when you're, you know, if you're planting a backyard apple tree, look at which ones are resistant and have the flavor and other features that you want. And then, you know, you still might have some problems in a bad year, like a lot of the areas of Wisconsin have had this year with all the rain. You might still have some problems, but in an average year, you have less problems. And that's for the fungus. We still very often have problems with insects, though. It's harder to get resistance to different insects than it is the fungus and the fungal diseases.
And that Gays Mills area, I love that area. It's an ideal place for growing apple trees.
Just one more thing, you guys. What I'm particularly doing today is my job is grounders. And after the apples fall off the trees, we can't pick them up and sell them to people. But we can use them for vinegar, and most of our grounders, a great deal of them, are used for organic apple cider vinegar, which we press here at the orchard. And that mostly goes to Organic Valley, which is in Lafarge, very close. And the other portion of the ones that we pick up off the ground go to Rachel Ray's dog and cat pet food, so she can have organic. I'm not kidding you, Larry. And so a lot of the grounders that we pick up that we don't use for vinegar go to Rachel Ray's pet food. I don't even know what the brand, it might be Rachel Ray. I don't
probably
know. But it's just, I think it was very, very interesting that we got a little contract going with organic pet food filler. So.
And that's, you know, a good point. You know, we have to get over the needing the perfect blemish-free fruit and stuff. And a lot of times, you know, if it's your home apple tree, if you've got some spots on it and stuff, a lot of times you can just cut that away. You can still use the apples for applesauce or apple juice or things like that. And like I said, insects are a little more challenging than the fungal things. But if somebody's out there, you know, looking to plant some apple trees or fruit trees of any kind in their backyard, look at resistant varieties and be sure that you're spacing things correctly. You want to try to put your trees where they're going to get good air circulation and good breezes blowing through, because that lowers the humidity and that lowers the pressure from fungal diseases as well.
Yeah. Willie, thank you.
You bet. You guys have a good day, and thanks for the show, Larry.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Billy in Kewaunee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Billy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the call. Here's my train of thought. When you deadhead flowers, more of the energy goes into building the roots in the plant. I planted 4 Techni arborvitaes last year, and this year they are just full of little pine cone seeds.
Yep.
And I wonder if I took those off, would the energy go into growing? Because I want them to grow. I don't want the seeds.
Yeah.
You know, by the time the pine cones are formed in this time of year and stuff, it's probably too late. They've already put their energy into that. Technis grow fast if they have enough water and good soil conditions. I don't know for sure if removing the pine cones, you know, just as they're forming is going to make that big a difference on them. But they, you said they're 4 years old?
No, just last year.
Oh, just last year. Okay.
And they're doing well.
Yeah, so any tree that you plant, there's the saying, the first year it sleeps, the second year it creeps, the third year it leaps, okay? So they're, like you mentioned, they're growing roots, but technis are fast growing to begin with. So I don't know that I'd fuss with that.
You could try it, I suppose.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know that there's any research on that. I've never heard of that or heard of anyone doing that. But if you just planted them last year, next year they're going to put on more growth, and by the third year they're going to be growing a lot, whether you remove pine cones or not.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
The key is just make sure they have enough water, but, of course, don't overwater because we don't want to drown the roots.
Yeah, and it's actually been a little dry in some parts of the state here in the last week.
Yeah, it's gotten a little spotty.
Yeah, so that's something to think about for sure. Well, here we are about out of time, Diana.
Wow, that goes so fast, Larry.
Yeah.
Lots of great questions.
Lots of great questions. Thank you so much for being with us. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Always fun.
All right. Thanks, Diana. Diana Alfuth is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Pierce County, and she also teaches landscape design at UW River Falls, and she'll be back again, and we'll talk with her again. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Susan Carpenter from the UW Arboretum will join us to talk about native gardening. So hope you can stay with us for that. And then on Monday, we'll talk with our weather guys. That's Monday at 11:45. In the meantime, thank you so much for being with us. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.